journey into the Bible and explore its hidden text and rich wisdom. Join Adel Kazilski Mondays at 1 p.m. for the trip of a lifetime.
Welcome to 101.9 High FM. I'm Adel Kazilski, and we are going to be spending some time together. Very happy to. Happy always for you to join the conversation on 34519 or 061-895-1019. This is an open forum, and if you've got any questions, I'll be glad to see if I can help you. We are starting chapter 15 of the book of Exodus. We're in the Parsha of B'Shalach. And we spoke last week, gave an introduction to the very famous Shirat Hayam, the song that was sung at the edge of the sea once the Jews had crossed over. And actually, truth be said, I should not be saying crossed over, but went through the dry land in the sea and came out on the other side, even though it wasn't the other side, as you will see. And they sang a praise to Hashem. Now, before we explain the song, it's beneficial again to recapitulate the entire story of the miracle, because I don't think that any of us actually understood the amount of miraculous things that happened at the sea. In fact, we are told that when Yitro, who was Moshe's father-in-law, when he heard of the miracle of the Red Sea, that was the point that he chose to convert. Interestingly, so we spoke a little bit about some of the miracles. I am going to repeat myself somewhat, and I don't see myself finishing it in one shot. But I'm going to show you. The Midrash is going to show me that I'm going to show you that there were actually 50 miracles that had to come together in order to see this miracle of the Dead Sea. And in fact, the Midrash brings that people would say that if Aristotle had seen the miracles of the Exodus and the Red Sea, he would never have said that the world was without a beginning, because seeing these miracles with your own eyes would be enough to refute all the arguments of philosophy. So what basically the splitting of the sea was, that it was a complete, clear indication of a fundamental point that we should be living our lives with. And that is that Hashem directs the world, that he rewards each one as he deserves, and if need be, God will go and override the very laws of creation in order to do that. So that is what the splitting of the sea was all about. And now we're going to start moseying our way, because I told you I don't think that I'm going to manage to finish all 50 miracles that happened, but let's go through them. Some of them we have spoken before, but it's always good to repeat oneself. Right. Let's start with miracle one. First miracle is that from the time the Jews left Egypt through the Red Sea until they came to the land of Israel, which was 40 years later, one of the immense miracles was that the clouds of glory protected the Jews. Now, we are told that there were 7 clouds. There were 6 surrounding the Israelites on 4 sides. So left, right, north, east, south, west, one on the bottom, one on the top. And they were there to protect the Jews from weather, from snakes, from scorpions on the ground. And they carried them along day and night like a huge ship. So they were basically encapsulated in these clouds of glory. The 7th cloud went before them. And we are told that this 7th cloud smoothed out all the hills and the valleys so that they were able to travel along a level route. And also the cloud went ahead of the Israelites by a 3-day journey so that it could sweep up the area. The cloud would turn into a pillar of fire to illuminate the night. And this went on, as I said, for 40 years. And we are told, says the Midrash, that the north wind never blew, so not to dispel the clouds of glory. There is one opinion, not the major one that is held, that in fact there were 13 clouds, two on each side, two below, two above, and one clearing the way for them. So that is miracle number one. Number two, Hashem gave Paroi and his advisors the idea of pursuing the Israelites, which is really, from a practical point of view, illogical after the 10 plagues, when a country goes through what they went through with the plagues, okay? And the place is decimated beyond description. There is death and destruction on every level of creation, from the inanimate to the plant, to the animal, and yes, even to the human being, who in their right mind would gather the army and start and try and chase the enemy. And understand, it wasn't that the enemy was sitting at their door. They had to run they had to chase for 3 days straight. And even more than that, the miracle here was that they never tired, they never got discouraged, and they never thought that this was an unusual way to behave. This was, again, a miracle. God was manipulating the world in such a way that the Egyptians would be digging their own grave. And that's exactly what they did. Miracle number three. On the seventh night of Pesach, the clouds changed position and went and stood behind the Israelites. Now, and then also the cloud changed its nature. It became half dark, half light, leaving the Egyptians in darkness and illuminating the Jews with light. And so that which was leading them in the front went to the back and made a separation between them. And we spoke about the fact that because it was dark in the camp of the Egyptians, they couldn't really take aim, they couldn't practice, they couldn't shoot anything, because they couldn't see what they were doing, which leads us to miracle number four. Although the Egyptians fired many arrows and missiles at the Israelites, all of them were absorbed in the clouds. Nothing came and harmed the Jews. And again, I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. When we sit and we learn about these miracles, you go, okay, well, these are extraordinary miracles. And, you know, there's nothing like this today. Let us just say that on the 14th of April, when we had 330 ballistic missiles coming to shoot at us, we were enveloped in the clouds of glory. Today, we've got fancy names for it. We call it the Iron Dome, and I don't know who, the David Sling, and all sorts of things. But truthfully, when Hashem wants to let something go through, he'll let something go through. He allowed Hamas to come through on October 7th with just some wire cutters and a bulldozer and wreaked the havoc that they wreaked. When it came now on the 14th of February of April, we had enough schus, we had enough merit that God actually completely protected us. That was the miracle that happened at the Dead Sea.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Indeed it is, and we are going through the 50 miracles that happened at the Dead Sea. We're only on miracle number five. Miracle number five is when the Israelites entered the sea, the water reached their nostrils, and then Hashem immediately split the sea. So we are told that what happened was that an east wind blew. It split it into two. And that's when we are told, we read earlier, that the sea became dry and the waters were split. And the word split in Hebrew is indicative of something hard. Now, why would we need something hard? So firstly, since the sea had initially refused to split at Moshe's command, you want to go back, you can hear all about that in my previous podcast. Okay, even after Moshe showed him his staff, he showed the special name of Hashem on the staff, The sea didn't want to, because it said that it made a promise at the beginning of creation, after Noah, never to go out of its boundaries. But God punished the sea and made the sea congeal and then split like a dry piece of wood. And we are told that the reason why God did all of this is that he wanted to make sure that no one would assume that this was merely a natural phenomenon, because the waters first became solid and then it split. And when the Egyptians entered the seabed, it once again became liquid and it drowned them. So don't think that the water split and it was nice and mushy on the left and the right. It actually congealed into something really, really hard. That was the fifth miracle. Miracle number six, on this seventh day of Pesach, which we said that the miraculof the splitting of the sea happened, what really happened was that all the waters in the world also split. The Torah doesn't say the sea split. It says the waters split. You can go look back that in chapter 14, verse 21. And so our rabbis teach us that it wasn't only the splitting of the Dead Sea, but all rivers, all cisterns, all pits, even water in pitchers and in barrels and in bottles, every single body of water split. And seeing everybody's water split, and seeing that, in fact, we're going to go and see that the next miracle was that it split into 12 for the Jewish people. But nevertheless, when the non-Jewish world saw the water that they were holding in their glass, that was sitting in their pond and their swimming pool and their sea and the river also split, they got very, very, very nervous. And then everybody ran to Bilam to ask them what was the significance of the fact that suddenly all the waters in the world were splitting. It was an uncanny phenomenon. And that's why when we're going to read Shirat HaYam, it's going to say, nations heard and shuddered. Terror gripped the inhabitants of Philistia. The chiefs of Edom panicked. The heroes of Moab were seized with trembling. And you really can ask the question, like, what did they have to do? They were far away, all these guys. Okay, the Plishtim and the Moabites and the Edomites, they were nowhere near that. Why were they trembling and panicking and doing all of that? Because their water also split. We say something extra about this also. We say, Hayam ra'a ve'yanos, that the sea saw and fled. Hayarden tisof le'achor, that the Jordan River turned around back. So we need to understand, what does it mean, the sea saw and fled? It said that the sea, when they saw the Jews starting to move outwards into the sea, it ran away so that the Jews would be able to cross over. Hayam ra'a, the sea saw, this is from Hallel, by Yanos, and it ran away. So as the Jews were walking, the sea was splitting, and they were walking on dry land. But why Hayarden Yisof Na'achor, that the Jordan River reversed its course? Okay. So we are told that this was done in order to even make more publicity around the great miracle around the world. Nobody could go and say, well, all the water split, because there was this east rand that was blowing. Okay. And God also, by the way, sent the wind to confuse the Egyptians and make them think it was a natural phenomenon, because if they had seen that it was miraculous, they wouldn't have gone into the water. But when the rivers, when the Jordan River went in the wrong direction, started flowing in the wrong direction, that was indicative that this, in fact, was a massive, massive miracle. Okay, so that is the significance. Now, just to mention as well in this miracle that the waters in the pitcher, the barrels, the bottles, all of them, when they split, it divided clearly down the bottom of the container and the displaced water rose to the sides. So it looked exactly like the splitting of the sea. And the way that the rivers split, all the rivers that were around in the whole of the Middle East, the way they split, they didn't split, longitudinally, they split lengthways, which means water ran on both sides, leaving a dry path in the middle of the channel, okay? And that's why we talk about the flowing water standing up like a wall. So this was a really, really, really scary phenomenon, and it affected the entire world. It wasn't only subjective to where the Jews were standing and what was happening to them, but the miracle of the splitting of the sea actually happened everywhere. Right, number seven. The sea divided into 12 parts, one for each of the 12 tribes. We spoke about that. Why did God do that? It was an act of love. God gave each tribe its own part in the sea so not to disturb each other. Have you ever tried going out of a packed hall somewhere and then trying to have the patience to get out? Well, God made it much easier. He was in event management and he did 12 splittings. Now, how do we know that? Because we say, this is my God, and I will glorify him, right? This is my God. Ze has a numerical value of 12. And from there, the rabbis learn that that is how they actually split. Now, the sea that the Israelites crossed that actually come into existence in the time of Enosh, okay? And it actually waited until now, where it was allowed to split open. And really, at the end of the day, this whole splitting of the sea was there. It was purposely there because it was there to lead the entire world to recognize that Hashem is the master mover, and that everybody should just call in Hashem's names. Right, what was the eighth miracle? The sea was like a tent covering the Jews on all sides. It says in Habakkuk, with his staff, he pierced over the heads of his aristocrats, which means Hashem pierced the sea with Moshe's staff, making it like a cave. And that's how the Jews traveled, protected from all sides. And as we mentioned before, not only were they protected by the walls of the sea, but the clouds of glory also accompanied them into the sea. Now, why did the Jews merit such a thing? Because this was a special reward, says the Midrash, for the Israelites placing the blood of the Korban Pesach, of the Paschal Lamb, on the two doorposts and the lintel. So just as the blood was like a tunnel, so the blood being put on, and it was on the doorpost, so the sea went through them. And also, remember that when many Jews went and did Brit Milah, they circumcised on the night of the Exodus. You will see now that God, just like you wait for a wound to heal and congeal, that God now went and healed and congealed the sea, so to speak, so that it would allow space for them to walk through. Right, miracle number nine, the seabed was perfectly dry as if there had never been any water on it. And that's why we said the Israelites walked b'yabasha b'toch hayam. They walked on dry land in the sea. Now, anybody will know, normally it takes many months, lots of time for a seabed to become dry completely. How do we know that? For example, we know going back to, since we're in Egypt mode, if you go look at the Nile, and the Nile floods, it takes many, many months for the land to become completely dry again. We also know that after the flood, when it came to Noah, okay, the land was not dry for many months. Here, the miracle was that they walked betoch, b'yabasha betoch hayam. They walked on dry land. Okay, so we are told in the Midrash a little bit more information. That is that when the waters first parted, the sea was covered with boiling mud. And certain of the Jewish people went and said, if the sea could dry up now, mud certainly cannot. Okay. And there were people that were complaining. And in fact, it said that the tribe of Reuben said to Shimon in Egypt, we were up to our knees in clay, and look at us now, we're going to have to wade through the mud. And that made God really, really, really angry. And it said that Moshe had to intervene. He had to pray on their behalf. Hashem had mercy. And what he did was that he dried up the seabed. And that's why we say in the Haggadah, if you had split the sea, but you had not brought us through it on dry land, Dayenu, it would have been enough. But a huge miracle happened there, that things could be completely dry. Now, here's another interesting thing that we see, is that when the seabed actually dried up, it wasn't an ordinary ground, but it came out as actually a beautiful mosaic, you know, like you find in palaces. That's why it says in Tehillim, you broke the seabed into small pieces with your power, which is indicative, again, that the seabed was broken into small pieces, forming a mosaic, in order to show honor to the Jewish people. That was miracle number 10. Miracle number 11, which we spoke about, is that when the sea divided into 12 lanes, the walls dividing the tribes remained perfectly transparent, and the tribes were able to see each other. And the light from the pillar of fire reflected through the transparent walls, and it was like sparkling chandeliers. Right, let's go and see the next miracle. This is miracle number 12. When the children began to cry while they were crossing the sea, God made the walls of the tunnel produce fruit and sweetness in order to comfort them. And it says also there were winds that blew, and these winds smelt of the fragrance of Gan Eden, and that made the whole of the experience, they felt like they were smelling perfumes. The reason why God gave food was to show that he is the provider of Parnassa, just like he was going to go later now and provide the Israelites with all their needs in the desert. He gave them food and sweetmeats while they were crossing the Red Sea. And some say, rabbis say, they were even provided with fruit as an orchard. Now, miracle number 13 is a very interesting one, because the Red Sea is salt water. And if we say it's congealed, then what would happen if they needed to drink? The miracle that happened was that, albeit that it was seawater, what happened was that the walls for the Jewish people yielded fresh water so they could drink. If an Egyptian tried to drink, he would actually die of thirst because there was no available water. And this was a double miracle, right? Because first the sea congealed, and then became like mountains on both sides of the Israelites. And then this congealed sea yielded fresh water for the Israelites. And that's why we say in Tehillim, he turns a pool of water into bedrock and the hard stones into fountains of water. That's in Tehillim in chapter 114, because the whole nature of this was flip-flopped, and one minute it was as hard as a rock, and the next morning it was a brilliant way to drink. And not only that, all the Israelites and all their livestock had enough water to drink. Each of them were able to perforate the walls of water, separating the tribes with their fingers. And it said streams of water would flow out just like fountains. Absolutely quite amazing. Let's do one more before we go to the break. And this is miracle number 14, that despite all the terror, despite all the confusion, not a single Israelite woman miscarried, even though there were many pregnant women amongst them. Okay, so we can see that again here, when it comes to children, Hashem blesses the womb, and not a single woman had a miscarriage. Interestingly, though, the Erev Rav, the riffraff that came with us, the Egyptians, amongst them, there were also pregnant women, but they actually suffered numerous miscarriages. And we can understand why, because, you know, this is difficult to travel, and travel does upset the you know, a woman carrying, et cetera, et cetera. Nevertheless, the miracle was that not a single Israelite woman miscarried, but amongst the Erev Rav, there were numerous miscarriages. If you have any questions, you can post 34519 is our SMS line. 061-895-1019 is our Telegram number. This is Adel Kozelski, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kozelski.
We are discussing the 50 miracles that happened to the Jews, or that occurred at the time of the splitting of the sea. And as I said in my introductory remarks, that this, in fact, was here to show us, and finally, without any more question, that God is king of this world and that he runs absolutely everything. Right, let us continue with miracle number 16. After 15. Although there were deep canyons and crevices in the seabed, which anybody who's gone diving will know that the seabed is not a flat surface, the Jews were able to walk on a level path. Where there were deep depressions, the water remained and merely congealed, so that the Israelites were able to walk on hardened water. So there was like a kind of like this filling up of potholes. God managed to ensure that everything was flat for them. Right, number 16. After the Israelites finished drinking water, well, if you could poke your finger into this wall and you had a fountain, well, how do you switch it off? The miracle was that the water immediately solidified. So as soon as they had drunk this flowing water, as soon immediately afterwards they were finished, it again went back to being still, to being solid, and to being a wall around them. That in and of itself was a miracle. Miracle number 17. Now, here's something that maybe not all of us thought about. Surely there were many aged people there. Surely there were many infirm amongst the Israelites. Now, if you're going to try and shift 3 million people across somewhere and you've got either the aged or the infirm, that is going to slow you down. But that wasn't true. The miracle was that the passage across the Red Sea was easy, and they felt as if they were just being carried themselves and nobody delayed anybody. They managed to cross over the whole night and they reached land by the daybreak of the seventh day of Pesach. Right, miracle number 18. When the Torah says there that it was flowing waters stood up like a wall, and we're going to go and see, we're going to go through the verses themselves. But when the verse says this, it indicates that obviously there were like waters towering up, as we said, on both sides of the Israelites, like huge mountains. But why we're bringing it up again is that the waters were so high that you could actually see it from afar. And this phenomenon made the nations hysterical. And that's why, again, it says the chiefs of Edom panicked and the heroes of Moab were seized with trembling, because they could actually see it from afar, what was going on. They saw the height of what was happening there, and that really screwed them big time. Right, miracle number 19. A very simple one, but a miracle nevertheless. Vegetation grew out of the seabed for the Israelites' animal feed, because who would think that, or we also have to feed the animals. So we've got the Jews helping themselves to water and to delectable fruits and anything they wanted from the walls. What happened to all the animals? Well, there was vegetation around so that they too could eat. Now, miracle number 20 is actually a practical one, but doesn't really make sense if you think about it. And that is, although the splitting of the sea was an obvious miracle, what was a bigger miracle was that the Egyptians pursued the Israelites right into the sea. That is a miracle. Like, surely a human being will go and look at this and go and say, no, this is dangerous. Let's sit back. Let's think about it. Let's maybe reorganize. Let's call the Navy in as opposed to the cavalry. Like, why? They went completely against human logic. And that in and of itself was a miracle, because God was doing it in such a way that they actually lost all sense of who they were. And that is what happened. Right. Miracle number 21. Although the seabed had become as hard as stone for the Israelites, the opposite happened when the Egyptians crossed. Okay, the pillar of cloud transformed the seabed into Maya. So this was, remember, we said that the whole point of Shirat HaYam is to come and teach us that God is the creator of the world, that he runs the world, and that every deed does not go unpunished or rewarded. Why did the Jews manage to walk on hard ground and then the Egyptians get stuck in the mud? Very simply, the Egyptians had made the Israelites tread in mud all day. So now, guess what? They found themselves with themselves up to their knees in mud. Now, this pillar of fire that kind of like melted the seabed and made it turn into mud, miracle number 22 is that the pillar of fire made this mud not only mushy, but it made it boil. And what happened was the horse's hooves were burnt down. And that was a terrible thing, because then the horses went haywire. Miracle number 23. And this was, we've mentioned it before, but I'm going to mention it again because it's very interesting, that Hashem removed one wheel from every chariot. Why one wheel? On purpose. Because what would happen then is that he would have the horses. The horses would panic because they've lost their hooves. They would start pulling around these disabled war chariots. And they, what happened was then that the vehicles started swinging backwards and forwards, breaking bodies as they went. You know, when all the wheels come off, then you come to a grinding stop. But when you go to, what's the name? When you only take off one wheel, you lose control. And that is really what God wanted and God intended. Miracle number 24. Many Egyptians fell from their chariots and were not able to get up again. And in the Israelite song, in the song we're going to sing, there are three groups. One, it says, they sank to the bottom like stone. The second group was, they sank like lead. And the third one was, they were devoured like straw. Now, so what does it mean? It means that the most wicked of the Egyptians were devoured like straw. They were tossed up and down in the water, suffering very much before they drowned. Those who were less wicked sank slowly like a stone. And the least wicked were put out of their misery quickly. They sank down to the bottom like lead. Okay, let's stop at the halfway mark with miracle number 25, which was interesting that although it became a huge impossibility for the chariots to move because they were missing a single wheel, the chariots were able to ride towards the closing waters. So even when the Egyptians tried to turn the chariots around, they had like a life of their own, and they headed towards the approaching waters. So that was really, really weird. So you can just imagine sitting on the or viewing this, whether it was from above or seeing what was going on, to understand that everything that happened at the splitting of the sea was completely and utterly miraculous. We're going to go for a bit of a break. This is Adel Kozelski, and this is Mystical Text 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kozelski.
I got a great question from Joseph, who says, Shalom Aleichem, well, Aleichem Shalom, Joseph. The stuff of Moshe, what happened, the staff of Moshe, what happened to the staff when he died? Where is it today? So let me just give you a quick understanding about the staff of Moshe. It's a very, very interesting story. We know that the staff was a very, very unique staff, and it was actually created as one of the 10 wondrous things that was created at twilight on the first Shabbat of creation. And the Midrash tells us that this staff was given to Adam in Gan Eden. Adam gave it to Enoch, Enoch to Noach, Noach to Shem, Shem to Abraham, our forefather. Abraham gave it to Yitzchak, Yitzchak gave it to Yaakov. Yaakov brought it down to Egypt and he gave it to his son Yosef. When Yosef died, this staff, the Egyptians pillaged Yosef's household goods and it was placed in the palace of Paroi. Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, who was initially one of Paro's advisors, saw the rod. He saw the important letters that were engraved upon it, which was the name of Hashem. He wanted it, and what he did is he stole the rod and he brought it to Midian, and he planted it in the middle of the garden of his house. Okay? And once he put it into the ground, nobody could pull it out. When Moshe came, he had fled Egypt, right? And he comes to Yitro's house. He goes to the garden, he sees the rod, he sees the letters on it, he pulls the rod out, which nobody else was able to do, and Yitro says then, this one will be one day the redeemer of Israel. And so he gives Tzipora to Moshe as a wife, and we are told that Moshe then takes the staff and he uses the staff. What happens to it? We are told, the Midrash says, that the staff then was passed from generation to generation, from Joshua all the way down through all the Judean kings. And then you will see by King David, it says, and he took his staff in his hand. And that this, they say, is the reference to Moshe's special staff. Where is it today? We're told that before the temple was destroyed, the staff was hidden. Some say it was placed together with the implement, the implements of the tabernacle that Moshe made, as well as the holy ark. But here's the good news, Joseph. The Midrash tells us that Moshe's staff will ultimately be given to Mashiach during the time of the Messianic redemption. Let's hope that this happens immediately in our day. Thank you for asking that, and I hope that this gives you a little bit more insight. And that wraps up the show for today. I've had fun. I've learned some stuff. Hope you have too. Thank you for joining me. And I'll be back same time, same place next week. This is 101.9 Chai FM.